Hey guys, James here. Excited for you to listen to our season finale of Who Kicked the Corner Flag. Just a quick heads up, we had some technical snafus during our recording last night, so there is a slightly shorter edition of this episode. We are missing that player profile this time around, so apologies there, but we do have a majority of the episode available for your listening enjoyment. As always, do follow us on our social media stuff, at Kick Corner Flag on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. All right, guys, enjoy the show.
This is Who Kicked the Corner Flag, an English soccer game show podcast. And here's your host, James Rose.
Greetings and welcome to this, the season finale of our EPL trivia. After a rather bizarre season under unique circumstances, the league concludes, winners are crowned, and teams are officially relegated. Sorry, Cherries. Here, as usual, to help out quiz the season conclusion are my good friends, Mr. Jared Bustamante and Mr. Boyce Richardson. Fellas, how we doing?
It's over.
I'm
glad.
Yeah, it's over. I'm happy to announce the fourth consecutive canceling of St. Totteringham's Day.
And
a wonderful arson fall to everybody out there, all of my lily whites.
Arson fall,
that is the dumbest name ever. And also, celebrating 6th over 8th is not much better. But regardless, congratulations that we were both awful. And things aren't looking up for next year, and Arsenal might sign Coutinho. So we're obviously going in the complete wrong direction, which is just brilliant.
We're in the complete upside down now with just the world, just life, just the Premier League. But anyway.
But you know who's challenging for a trophy on Saturday?
Oh, no. I knew it was going to come up at some point. Yeah.
Man, it still is. Imagine if Arsenal won a trophy for the second time in Tottenham's 4-year reign. And Spurs just have to sit and stare at the ground and look at their empty trophy case and think, man.
But we'll have a documentary from Amazon, and it'll be just fantastic. So let's just...
Where Mourinho tells you that you need to be insufferable, which is amazing, because you are. So mission accomplished.
Oh, man.
Look at Mourinho. It's great.
Oh, my God. Was that a compliment? The judges? I think that was a compliment. I'll take it.
What's the first question?
I got to find the beeping sound effect for that naughty word. Anyway, let's jump right in. Quiz. Each of you are going to get questions for this first section, kind of like the last 2 weeks we've been doing this. Jared, here is your first question. Bournemouth suffer the fate of relegation after 5 consecutive years in England's football top flight. Last season, they won 13 games and finished 14th. But how many games during this season did they manage to win? Was it 9 or 12?
Oh, man. I feel like they stumbled down the way. I think it was only 9.
Is that your final answer?
They sucked everywhere, especially at home, which is weird because it's like playing at a high school. Yeah, 9.
Yes, there it is. 9. 9 wins from the season. But nice work, Jared. That'll get you those first 2 points. I asked this question to you specifically because listeners of the pod will know that you are a secret Cherries fan as well. So just go ahead and talk us through your emotions, knowing that the Cherries are no longer in the Premier League, and ultimately how it all unraveled with the scandal, of course, from that other game that affected them. How are you feeling? Give us the breakdown.
You know, it is just a damn shame. I mean, this team was so likable, you know, led by the, you know, crushingly handsome and tactical genius that is Eddie Howe. some Tottenham supporters were kind of, you know, seeing the writing on the wall and thinking, hey, if maybe we have an interim manager and if Cherries go down, maybe we just back up a truckload of money and get the, you know, the young head coach again to come on over. There's even, you know, I've even kind of just, you know, spitballed with some of my U.S. men's national team friends about saying, hey, you know, Eddie's free. Like, bring him in. Fact of the matter is, you know, this team struggled with injury. And despite, you know, having, you know, coming up and making record signing, you know, in Jordan Ibe, having even the, you know, the likes of the visiting Jack Wilshere, made of glass, to come in, you know, in seasons past. I think, you know, what happened here is you just had a You had a lack of depth. You had a lack of, just kind of ability to exist long term in the Premier League, which is a really hard thing to do. I mean, I think Cherries will be back. 5 years of Premiership money that is going to help. Their coaching staff is going to remain intact. I'd be interested to see who they lose. With going down, obligatory, kind of purge when you drop down to the Championship. Mm-hmm. You see the likes of, Nathan Ake, Callum Wilson, Dominic Solanke. I wonder who they're going to lose.
Well, so Jared, Ake doesn't have a relegation clause. I'm going to go ahead and assume they're going to lose him. I think that's been Bournemouth's big problem right now is they have a lot of players that are not, they don't have relegation clauses in their contracts. And those players are obviously going to have to go.
Is Nathan Ake, at one point he was touted for Spurs. I don't know if he still is.
I heard the rumors have been City lately, which is not surprising. They're in for everybody all the time. But sorry, Jared, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's, yeah.
No, but that's kind of my point, right? Is that, are they built to withstand, the phrase, are you built to withstand relegation, maybe seems a little silly, but, there have been teams that have, existed in the Championship and then, come in like a force. And frankly, Bournemouth was one of those teams. Wolves are the latest example of that team. West Brom will not be an example of that team. May they go and just forever stop destroying the game of football. But I think, it's going to be an uphill battle, for them, depending on, how many players they lose, if it's a, the fire sale, that's going to be a problem, kind of coming in, the Vitality seats, we've looked at this up, 13,000 people?
Something about that, 11,000, yeah.
It's something hysterical. So, it's not turnstile money. We know that. The counter to this, James, it's like, hey, do South Coasters even care? maybe they don't. I don't know. Maybe this random person in Kansas City cares more. I don't know. But, they're a fun team to watch. And they pose some problems for some of the bigger clubs every here now and again. But you got to think they just turned into a pumpkin. So. I hope that they're back. I hope that they can rebuild. But it's really going to be an issue of, folks getting healthy and then just surviving the inevitable purge of their undoubtedly best players.
That's the sad reality, but there we go. Boys, let me ask you your question. Watford FC find themselves once again dropping to the lower tier after finishing 19th this season. In their football history, how many other times have the Hornets been relegated? Two times or just once?
I quite honestly have absolutely no idea. I think it's twice. Who knows?
Boom, you're right, good guess. Yes, that'll get you those first 2 points. Two times, they've been up, they've been down. Troy Deeney and the delightful Watford FC. But
your favorite!
That's why I picked this question for boys, because I know he's a huge fan on Watford, but obviously you can talk a little bit too about Bournemouth and maybe even Norwich in this instance. But your thoughts on the overall three teams to drop?
You know, I think the reality with Watford that's a little bit unfortunate is that Aston Villa had a bunch of players on it that I wouldn't have minded ending up at Arsenal, right? So Mings and Jack Grealish, and there were a host of other players on that team that I would have been happy to pick from the skeleton of the dead Aston Villa team. But I think Watford is probably the best of the three to go down. You look at players like Doucouré, you've got Danny Welbeck, you've got, for want of a better existence, Troy Deeney. There's actual talent on that team, and I think that the ownership just caused them to absolutely fall apart. I mean, you think about the fact that this Watford team, actually two of the teams in the relegation beat Man City. So
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, right? And the other thing is that, Norwich beat Man City, and Watford beat Liverpool. So think about that for a little while. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of a crazy year. Both those teams had a lot of talent, and you look at it go down, Norwich just seemed to be prepared the entire year to go down. They fought at the beginning. I had Timu Pukki on my FPL team, and that lasted for all of about 3 weeks until he just stopped scoring goals. Watford, again, I think it's the ownership situation. I think there's talent enough on that team for them to be able to stay up, even if Craig Dawson just turns around and runs to everybody rampantly throughout the entire year. So it is one of those things, but I'm not going to I'm not going to be sad to see them go. Mm. You know, I think the benefit ultimately is that you look at the championship this year and you have Brentford and Fulham to be the likely teams to enter into the EFL playoff to join the EPL in the third position. Both those teams are in London. They'll just replace Watford. Everybody will quickly forget that they ever existed and we'll move on. I just, that team's been annoying. Troy Deeney's been a thorn in my side. You know, he scored a penalty kick. Congratulations, but it was kind of fun to watch him. And then for him to suffer the indignity of having to say at the end that Arsenal fought really hard and he was impressed was kind of funny, because I think that he's since rued his cojones comment from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that team's going to get picked apart, because I also think, although they haven't reported it in the same way as Bournemouth, that Watford probably didn't have a lot of relegation clauses in its contracts as well. And you're going to see halfway decent players off of that roster end up elsewhere throughout the Premier League. Not a lot within the defensive ranks, I don't think. I don't think that Jan Mott, Dawson, or Mariapa are really all that great, but I could see Tom Cleverley ending up somewhere. But I look at some players like Decore, Andre Gray, Pereira.
Etienne Capoue, are you going to leave out?
Yeah, I have no interest in him.
Isn't Dan Lafay on the squad still?
There's talent on that roster, and there are a lot of players ultimately that could end up on other teams. Mm. And I think it was just cutthroat this year. I thought it was really interesting. You would have assumed that Aston Villa would probably end up in the relegation zone. Ultimately, you know, if Arsenal end up winning the FA Cup on Saturday, the fact that we lost to Villa and allowed them to stay in the league and it relegated Watford isn't something that's going to bring me anything but joy, because it was kind of fun that we pretty much single-handedly over the last two game days managed to relegate Watford by, you know, letting us get beat against Aston Villa and then turning around and beating Watford in what was really an NBA Jam tournament edition EPL match in terms of just watching players go back and forth and the defense being absolutely irrelevant.
Right. Kind of crazy. Jared, here's your next question. True or false? Frank Lampard, a.k.a. Frankie Football, is the first English debut manager to lock in fourth place in the EPL since 1994.
English debut manager to lock in the top four finish. Since 94.
Yeah.
Sure.
It is. Yeah. Yep, it is true. You got it. Nice work. You were thinking that I might have. There you go. Yeah. We joked about, I say Frankie Football because those are your exact words when you were describing him in the first instance. And I think you stuck with it throughout any kind of conversation about him.
I did.
He ultimately surprise you when it, all things considered, getting Chelsea into the top four, the results that they got? I mean, can you give the guy some credit maybe?
Giroud got them into the top four and didn't play them the entire first half of the campaign. So don't give me any of this. Sorry, Jared. That's it.
I can never tell. Like, do you hate Giroud now? Do you love him? Like, I don't know, man. Like, if he doesn't return your letters, that's fine. But I mean, you got to give him credit, right? We talk about this and we talk about Chelsea, and I'm so just pissed because they're in bringing up so much of this young talent that nobody really realized they had. And now, as you know, Boyce's, you know, talked about previously, the lifting of the transfer ban, and they're just sitting on a truckload of money. And that's with an in-form Christian Pulisic and an in-form Mason Mount and a seemingly ageless Willian. Did he properly deploy his just monstrous arsenal of talent? Sure. Okay. And yeah, that is jealousy. That has a little bit of undertones there. So I don't want to hear it from the CIA. You guys still suck. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, you got to give him credit where credit is due. I think they're going to bail on Kepa, which, like, the most expensive keeper in history, benched. An old Willy Caballero. That old coyote brings it home, right? I mean, so you got to give credit where credit is due. On the personality management side, it seems that old Frankie has been able to do that. So, you know, more so than Sarri has. I mean, we all remember the absolute Looney Tunes situation with Kepa coming out, or is he not coming out? And the father son spat on the sideline with Sarri. While he's, you know, sitting there, you know, literally eating cigarettes. It was all just kind of bonkers at the bridge. And I, along with Boyce, very much enjoyed that. Chaos. Wanted the chaos. And now you got a Chelsea that has the potential to kind of be a bit of a machine. So, you know, we're going to see how things kind of play out on the weekend, you know, for the cup. But I'll eat some crow here. Credit where credit is due. And now the dude's going to have absolutely a blank check to go out, get who he wants. And this roster is absolutely bonkers, to the exception of Ross Barkley and Marcus Alonso, who, by the way, murdered his girlfriend, people. CIA, you cheer for a team. Guy murdered his girlfriend, just sure so enough. You know.
Yeah. It's cool. Nicolas Pepe is going to murder him on Saturday.
And you know what? I'm not endorsing murder. I will deal with no general embarrassment and all of that. That's for the Spanish courts. Again, we're giving credit where credit is due, right? Commit a crime, do it in Spain. So the point is, this roster is just absolutely nuts. We'll see how it plays out. But like I said, I'll eat a little bit of crow
here. I'll take it. All right, boys, here's your question. True or false? Manchester United extend their unbeaten run now to 14 games in the EPL, which is now their longest run without defeat since April 2017.
That feels fair. Yes.
Bam. Yes, it is. Both true today. Nice work, guys. I'll get you those next 2 points, boys. On Manchester United, then, on their, would you say, lucky appearance back in the Champions League? How would you assess their season overall? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer still at the wheel. Thoughts on them moving forward?
First and foremost, the only reason that Manchester United are in the championship or in the Champions League for 2021 is that Brendan Rodgers should be fired. I know we're not talking about Leicester today, but what happened to Leicester post project restart? Really, right. What happened to Leicester as we entered into 2020? It's an absolute embarrassment. And I know that we were talking about Brendan Rodgers for manager of the year for the first half of the season, but the fact that Leicester somehow ended up out of the top four is an indictment upon legitimately everyone associated with that entire football club. Jamie Vardy ended up winning the Golden Boot. They had like a 20-point lead and they blew it. They're the Golden State Warriors of the EPL, and they should be absolutely embarrassed. And they had Manchester United at home on the last day. And don't get me wrong, I don't know if you guys have seen those penalty pools that have been rolling around, that like Manchester United receives a penalty for every 68 touches in the box, which is just insane.
I believe it.
That is absolutely insane. They have double the penalties of legitimately anybody else in the entire English Premier League over the last few years. It's bonkers. It's absolutely wrong. So you ask me why they're in the Champions League. That's why. You know, Bruno Fernandes steps on somebody's foot and gets a penalty. It's just one of those things where, yeah, ultimately in a lot of those matches, Manchester United ended up winning by a couple goals. But the course of the match shifts when penalties like that are awarded, and they get them all the time for absolutely everything. And they got one against Leicester. But the thing is, Leicester shouldn't be in that position, and they should have put up more of a fight. The fact that you have all of those players on your team, you have the Golden Boot winner, you're at home on the last day, and all you need to do is beat a Manchester United team that got kind of shellacked by Chelsea in the FA Cup. They looked absolutely lost when they came up against a team that kind of knew what they were doing, a Manchester United team that lost to Arsenal in January 2-0. You know, just a team that's managed by an individual who just has no idea what's going on. And they've won because they bought Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the open and shut reality of Manchester United's season, is that they won because Bruno Fernandes joined their team. And that's not necessarily, you know, I mean, good players change really good teams. And the other thing is that Mason Greenwood kind of came on towards the end of the year, and he looks like an absolutely complete player. And the thing that will be really funny in 2021 is watching Manchester United inevitably spend a ton of money on a player that prevents Mason Greenwood from entering into the starting 11 and he doesn't get a chance to score goals, even though he looks like a world-class talent. But no, Solskjaer gets no credit. They spent an otherworldly amount of money to buy the dumbest looking defender in the entire Premier League. And I'm not going to say that he's a bad defender, but the fact that Harry Maguire is the most expensive defender in world football history is insane. And he's slow and he's lethargic and he's been murdered on the pitch so many times this year. He must be a cat for the fact that he's even still alive. And then they went out in January and dropped a ton of money on Bruno Fernandes. And that's what they can do because they're the Glazers and they're Manchester United. And it's ultimately more frustrating because they're going to be back in the Champions League and they're going to have even more money. Now, you know, if you were looking at teams that are going to compete for the title next year, they won't. Because they're going to, Ed Woodward's going to spend their money idiotically. And that's the thing about Chelsea. And to Jared's point earlier, they have Peter Cech and Frank Lampard, and the two of them together at least seem to be knowing, they know what they're doing. Because, I mean, they bought Timo Werner, they bought Ziyech. It looks like, you know, they're buying that dude from Bayer Leverkusen. I've seen that they're rumored to be in for John Oblak, which is incredible because they just spent $72 million on Kepa. You know, they have all these players that they're going and looking at. And I will be completely honest. If they buy those three offensive players and then, like, Kai Havertz is the other one that I was thinking of, and then they buy John Oblak and they buy a central defender, you know, I think even Frankie Football could take them up against Liverpool and Man City next year. And I think those teams will be the class of the 2021 season.
They'll be the hard ones to beat. All right, each of you get one more question. Jared, this next one is for you. Despite finishing outside the top four, Spurs have once again finished in the top six. Hooray! This will be how many consecutive times achieving this major feat? Is it 7 or 11?
7.
It is 11. Would you believe it?
Oh, man. Made me short my team. Look at that.
Ouch. Yeah.
You got no faith.
I was going to say, you got to have faith.
Yeah, I'm a Spurs supporter. What's the matter with you?
Yeah. Well, we teased a little bit about it at the start, but give us your overall thoughts on, I know where this is going already, and it's hard to ask it, but overall thoughts on Spurs' performance this season versus the previous seasons.
Oh, God, man.
That's it. That's all I needed.
What are you doing to me?
I know.
Good grief. I know. I mean, I'll do it so Boyce can. I mean,
well, Boyce is about to get it for Arsenal, so.
You got to wonder what the hell happened.
Right.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, we are talking about a bit of a fall from grace, right? And if, you know, perhaps this team overachieved, you know, maybe last year to the Champions League and that single tournament, I could maybe deal with that. But that's not what happened. I mean, what happened was we had a 5-year ascendancy with a beloved manager, and it really felt like he was asked to fight with one hand tied behind his back.
Right.
And the guy just worked miracles. I think, you know, in kind of building the squad, it eventually just kind of the magic left. You know, there's a really interesting, you know, Ben Davis gave an interview in which he was asked about, you know, the difference in tactics between Mauricio and Mourinho. And, you know, he said something interesting. You know, he said, you know, with Mauricio, it was just more of a general ethos of the game, right? It was a high press, and how can you make people available, and how can you play this? And he almost made it sound like that it was, you know, just kind of a general philosophy behind the match and how to play the game. And then with Mourinho, you know, you get dossiers on every single player, you know, coming in, and your tactics change, and then you go and you play, and you need to play how to win the game. Those are two perfectly acceptable ways to approach the game of football. Mm. And, you know, when in reading that, I think, you know, maybe we did just need a change. Maybe these players, after, you know, coming up short on the world stage in the most brutal way, needed to say, hey, if A, then B. And maybe that was the change we needed. In addition to, you know, depth, players, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, dealing with wantaways like Christian Eriksen, that was tough. And then, you know, you have the rampant speculation about Harry. You know, we've talked about that on this pod, and there are, you know, multiple, you know, perspectives on that.
Boyce, here is your question. Arsenal locked in 8th place this season. The last time they finished lower than this was in 1994 to 95 campaign, when they finished in what position? Was it 12th or 14th?
I don't know. 12th.
Good guess. It was 12th. Yes, nice work. And that'll get you those next 2 points. So then, kind of similar to what Jared was discussing with Spurs, how would you assess Arsenal's season? Was it better than last season? Is there any promise moving forward for next season?
No.
That answered it.
No, there's really not. I mean, last season, we finished 5th. Mm-hmm. And we were legitimately only 1 point behind Spurs. And I think you look back at Unai Emery and the way that the team performed against Leicester, Wolves, Palace, Brighton, and you just wonder what could have been, right? Because you're just looking at a single point between us and a Spurs team that weren't really finishing that well towards the end either.
Right.
And you need to try and rectify that. This year we finished 8th, and the only reason that Arsenal finished 8th is that Sheffield and Burnley underperformed on the last day of the campaign. And, you know, midweek, if Arsenal had beaten Aston Villa, they could have finished in 7th, where Wolves are, and then we'd already have Europe and we'd be going into an FA Cup final. And, you know, it's easy to look at this season if in the event that we beat Chelsea on Saturday, which it's 50-50, right? Mm-hmm. In 2017, that Chelsea team actually won the EPL, and Arsenal had 0 fit defenders, and they played Per Mertesacker, a player that hadn't played a match the entire year, really. in central defense, and they still won. So it's the FA Cup final, tournament football, who really knows what could happen. But if you're looking towards the 2021 campaign, the rumors for Arsenal transfer-wise are all bad. Coutinho would be a player that perhaps improves Arsenal, but not at the loan value that Barcelona want for him right now. It's an older player when they should be going younger and emulating kind of the Liverpool model as far as things are concerned, and they're not doing that. Mm. But it kind of dovetails into what I was talking about earlier with Chelsea, which is the fact that Liverpool, Manchester City, and Chelsea are dead ringers for the top 4 next year, right? Yep. So there's one spot. So you're really competing against a rejuvenated Manchester United who are going to have Bruno Fernandes throughout the entire campaign. It appears as though things are at least kind of partially resolved with Paul Pogba, and they're going to go out and spend a ton more cash to try and reinforce in areas of need. So if your mission is to seek top 4 football next year, Manchester United's who you got to beat. Arsenal look completely rudderless when it comes to that. You know, if we're comparing them with Spurs, I think Arteta, in terms of modern football and the way that I would want to play, is a manager a little bit more geared to what I would want than Jose Mourinho is. And I think there's something to be said for that. But I also think that there are more saleable assets on Spurs. And the question is whether or not Daniel Levy can convert them into players as needed. And I'm just not sure that that's a reality either. I don't think Spurs are going to really challenge for the top 4 next year. I don't think Arsenal are really going to challenge for the top 4 next year. Arsenal still have one more year of Socrates. They have 2 more years of Kolasinac. They've got another year of Ozil. They've still got another year of Mustafi. Mustafi's now out until October. Mari, the defender that we brought in and ended up buying towards the end of the season, is out until September. Mm. We had William Saliba come in, who's a player that I'm pretty excited about from an Arsenal perspective, but he's 19 years of age, and you know he's operating in central defense. I think it's a lot to ask for him to go from Saint-Étienne to Arsenal and compete in the middle of the Premier League. Now, all that being said, William Saliba might ultimately end up being better than David Luiz and the sorry excuses that we have for defenders. But I think, you know, I kept looking at Arsenal's past maps towards the end of the campaign and definitely throughout Project Restart, and it was like a U around the 18-yard box. There were no entry passes into the 18-yard box. There were just a bunch of crosses that weren't necessarily connecting with anybody because players like Lacazette and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang are just not headers of the ball, right? They're not players that are going to connect in that fashion. So those crosses aren't influencing anything. And I think one of the things that you have to be just completely, you know, pooping your pants about if you're an Arsenal fan, as you look at the Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang contract situation, you realize that he scored over 20 goals 2 years in a row, and you need those, and it doesn't even matter how old he is, and there are just so many issues on that squad. There's 10 to 12 players I'd like to see get away. Ozil's still on $350K a week. You got one more year of him. If I'm Arsenal and I can get a team to pay £100,000 a week to him, and we just eat the 250 and you save a couple million pounds and you get rid of him, I think you just do it. There are just so many issues. Which is a really long way of saying I trust Arteta, and I think in a few years, assuming we can win the FA Cup and get into the Europa League and get a little bit of an extra financial bump, I think we'll be in a better position than we were under Unai Emery. May he forever leave. I will say before I conclude on this topic, I did really, really love that when Arsenal signed Unai Emery, Santi Cazorla left and went to Villarreal.
Mm.
And then when Villarreal hired Unai Emery, Santi Cazorla retired from La Liga and went to Qatar. So, my favorite player at Arsenal over the last decade at least has a pretty good vantage point of getting the hell out of Dodge before Unai Emery further tanks things. But I just, if you're a fan of Arsenal or Spurs or just North London generally, I think we're in some trouble. You look at the table this year, fourth place went to 66. Like, that's a pretty low comparative number for top four places previously. I think those teams are going to make, I think United and Chelsea both end up in the 70s probably next year. And to my earlier comment, Arsenal's problem this year was that they couldn't beat the Minnows because there was no, they couldn't, when a team backed up and parked the bus, there was no way for them to play incisive balls into the offensive zone to score goals. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that, you're not going to beat the Minnows. They played pretty well this year against the upper echelon teams. And if you can do that and you can maintain and you can find a way to beat the Minnows, that's great. But it's going to take four or five players. And is there the capital to be able to do that? I have no idea. And even at that, they're not competing with the top three.
I think it is kind of crazy in the sense that Arsenal and Spurs have kind of mirror image problems moving forward. Well, I say that in the sense that I think Spurs are almost feeling the same pain that Arsenal felt when they had their new stadium built. Spurs are now going through the same thing, but it's perhaps even worse for Spurs now because of the whole pandemic. They can't use that venue in any way. You can get any kind of money from it. But it's interesting to see how Spurs are going to get out of that problem, how Arsenal now are going to start having to find their own, figure out their own problems. So North London, I think, like you said, is going to be a hot mess for at least another 5 years.
Like I said, I don't think much of Mourinho at this point, but I think that Spurs are in a position where they have some pretty solid saleable assets. I mean, they just lost Vertonghen for free. You got Eriksen on a pretty cheap departure to Inter. You re-signed Alderweireld. That's great. I don't think that Levy has the guts to sign, a momentarily rejuvenated Harry Kane.
Mm.
But you got Dembele or Ndombele, who I think is the best midfielder on that team that can't get into the starting lineup that you just bought. But I think he's a pretty saleable asset. I really, for Spurs, I think it's a question of, are you willing to sell Ndombele? Can you get an offer for Serge Aurier? Can you get players in? I'm looking at players like Max Aarons from Norwich. Could Spurs potentially get him and bring him in at right back? I think the Spurs back four is not great.
Definitely not great.
Look to be nice. I mean, I saw that you guys are in for Hoiberg.
Yes, I think he's actually going somewhere else now. I can't remember where. I think it might be Everton, actually. But I think that might not be happening anymore. But man, if Eric Dier can stay away, that would just be fantastic. But anyway,
didn't you guys just re-sign him?
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you guys are good up front. I think that Bergwijn ended up being a pretty good player. You still have Kane. You still got Son. You still have players up there that can hurt teams. I think that you could potentially sell Dele.
Yeah.
This summer, I think that'd be a pretty good way to bring in some cash. But you need, it doesn't appear as though Sessegnon's going to be
reliable,
sufficient on the left side. And that basically means that, unless you're going to rely on Davinson Sanchez, Is that what you're going to do for the rest of the year? And in the middle of the park, Lo Celso is a talent and Ndombele is a talent. Harry Winks isn't going to get you into the top four.
No, definitely not. That does wrap up our show and indeed our season. My huge thanks, of course, to Mr. Jared Bustamante and Mr. Boyce Richardson for another fantastic quizzical season. Stay tuned for updates on our social media at Kick Corner Flag on Twitter, at Kick Corner Flag on Instagram, and our Facebook page for show plans moving forward. Have a great rest of the summer, and we will see you all next season.